while this firearm legislation is providing a permission to carry firearms into the parks, people still need to bring a sense of responsibility.
A new gun law takes effect in Skagway's Historical Park, and the Haynesboro runs into problems in enforcing the new Pelly City Ordinance. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more up next. A federal firearms law takes effect Monday that allows visitors to carry loaded, concealed firearms in parts of Skagway's Klondike Gold Rush National Historical Park. Firearms have generally been outlawed in the national park system, but Congress passed a bill that President Barack Obama signed last May that prohibits the federal government from banning firearms in national parks. But the new federal law is still subject to state law where the parks are located. Tim Stidell is the chief ranger at Klondike Gold Rush National Historical Park, and he says visitors to Skagway's park shouldn't see many changes, since they already defer to state law for many of their regulations.
Klondike Gold Rush National Historical Park, I think largely this law is really not going to change the experience for the visitors as much as some other locations. Here at Klondike, we have always adopted state laws with regard to hunting on state-owned lands within the park. So if people are out lawfully hunting, they could possess firearms. Firearms have always been prohibited on federal-owned parcels of land within the park, and this law will now actually override that. We will adopt state law on firearm regulations, and the visitor may possess in either open or closed carry mode or concealed carry mode firearms while visiting the park.
But the change can still be confusing to visitors, so Stidell encourages firearm carrying guests to educate themselves on state law before entering the park armed.
In the park in Skagway, because we are a conglomerate of federal and municipal and state parcels, you kind of have to look to the land that you're actually visiting while you're in the park. So it has been a little bit of a confusing issue for folks. If you're on federal property in the past, inside the park, then firearms have been prohibited except for transport purposes in an unloaded manner and broken down, not ready for immediate use. On state land, firearms have been permissible according to state law and for purposes of lawful hunts. Municipal lands have also adopted state laws, so the same applied to those lands. Today, we still have the federal, municipal, and state parcels within the park area, but this new legislation will now allow state law to have the primary jurisdiction on all of those parcels.
And the state law says those who are legally allowed to carry a firearm can do so in those areas unconcealed or in open carry mode. Under federal law, however, the use or discharge of firearms is still prohibited unless it's part of a legal hunt. That includes target practice or using the scope for viewing. Hunting is still prohibited in the same places, and so is bringing firearms in places like visitor centers. Signs are posted as of Monday where guns are banned.
There are exceptions to the federal firearm legislation permitting firearms on public properties. The one key exception is federal facilities. If any of our facilities meet the definition of a federal facility, firearms are still prohibited in those buildings and structures, and those will be identified. They are identified today, actually, with firearms prohibition signs clearly at each entrance.
Of course, the law was only adopted in the U.S. and does not affect Canada's firearms laws. Therefore, hikers crossing into the Canadian side of the Chilkoot Trail should not carry, since there'll be no system in place to check firearms at the border. Additionally, sport and subsistence hunting provisions remain unchanged.
I don't want people to confuse the new firearm legislation with hunting laws. This does not change hunting regulations or hunting laws or areas that are open to hunting at all. Federal properties, hunting is still prohibited within the national park unit. Hunting is only permitted on state-owned lands within the park and municipal-owned lands within the park, and the state laws still apply on them.
Primarily in the lower 48, groups like the Coalition of National Park Service retirees say the law is dangerous and will expose visitors to more openly carried guns. Stidell says that depends on the state where the park land is.
The parks are pretty varied in their handling of firearms over the years. I think that the impacts of lower 48 parks are going to be much more noticeable and contrary to maybe what the visitors have experienced in the past. In Alaska, there's been a lot more diversity, I think, amongst the parks and hunting laws and various different state and federal ownership jurisdictions determining whether or not firearms have been permitted or prohibited throughout the various different parks in Alaska.
And National Park Service Director John Jarvis affirmed the mission of the NPS has been to protect and preserve the parks and to ensure the safety of visitors. Stidell agrees.
Well, I think the most important thing for people to realize is that while this firearm legislation is providing a permission to carry firearms into the parks, people still need to bring a sense of responsibility and wise judgment in the use of the firearm. So folks still need to really make sure they understand all the full laws associated with carrying a firearm, wherever they're carrying it, and particularly looking at the state laws, because there are a lot more to it than just being permitted to bring your firearm out to the park these days. If folks do make the decision to carry a firearm on their person, we highly recommend that they participate in a firearm safety class, just because there's a lot of responsibility that comes with these new freedoms.
Furthermore, he believes firearms aren't even necessary in even the wildest parts of Klondike.
While there is a permission now for folks to bring firearms out on the Chilkoot on the U.S. side, we don't have a history of a demonstrated need for firearms. We haven't had aggressive bear encounters where anyone has required a firearm to defend themselves, and we certainly haven't had to put any bears down in the Park Service for any kind of defensive purposes. So pepper spray is still the recommended tool when hiking the Chilkoot Trail, and studies have demonstrated to be much more effective, actually, for bear defense.
The new law takes effect Monday, February 22nd, and founding Skagway gunslingers like Soapy Smith might be happy to hear it. He was known to carry at least a .41 caliber Colt revolver on his hip. Then again, he was also gunned down in a shootout. Haines Assisted Living is seeking support from the borough to expand the senior housing facility on 3rd and Union. Jim Studley, president of the facility, says the planned expansion will take place in the spring.
We are expanding the facility, and we will begin construction probably this spring. It'll be after the snow melts, and there's no chance of freezing or anything like that. So hopefully we're going to start around the 1st of May or maybe sooner.
The addition would be 5 units on the northeast wing of the current building and would directly connect to the rest of the facility through the unfinished east wall.
So an additional 5 units. These will be for low-income seniors, and they will be independent living homes where low-income seniors can come and live in the facility and essentially age in place and take advantage of the assisted living portion of their life when and if that becomes appropriate for their life.
Haines has the highest rate of growth per capita of seniors in the state, according to the U.S. Census. Additionally, the U.S. Administration on Aging says the percentage of seniors will increase from 12.4% to 20% in the next 25 years. The original Haines Assisted Living building was completed in September with 8 rooms, totaling $4.3 million. The next phase of the construction would begin around May and be finished by the end of the year.
What we're, looking at is probably, I'm going to say within a year we'll have full occupancy, but it takes a while to get people to make a life-altering decision, we all face that particular time in our life where we have to realize that, gosh, we're getting older, and what am I going to do to prepare for that, and how do I want to live out, the rest of my life, and we hope that we offer a very nice place for people to live and enjoy their life in the comfort of a home environment here in Haines, as opposed to having to leave. And that's what we've seen happen so many times, is that people end up having to go somewhere else. And we're trying to prevent that from happening.
At Tuesday night's meeting, the Assembly will consider a resolution supporting Haines Assisted Living's expansion. The resolution is much like the one Haines adopted before construction of the existing building and would not change tax exemption status. It would endorse Howell's work to obtain funds from non-borough sources and their continued construction and operation of the facility.
It's the same resolution the borough approved some years back. Essentially, it just shows that the government has support for our requesting funds from other entities other than borough entities. So we can, go out and ask for money with the support of the Assembly by having what, is a general resolution of support for the Haines Assisted Living Facility.
Also part of the next Assembly meeting, Borough Manager Mark Ernest brings forward concerns over the Heliski Ordinance adopted in late January. In a memo to the borough, Ernest says he has concerns with the borough's ability to apply some of the new provisions for the 2010 heli-ski season, which began last Monday. Details from the Office of the Clerk identify problems with the definition of infraction, which would determine how long and for what reasons a helicopter pilot could lawfully go off the flight corridor. It asks what action should be taken if wildlife is spotted when the law requires a half mile of distance between the helicopter and animal. Furthermore, concern is raised about the man hours that will be necessary to decipher the newly required flight data, and points out that no existing map shows the borough's accepted flight paths and boundary lines. A map of that sort would have to be created to compare the actual flight paths with the borough's regulations to determine infraction. Finally, it's unclear what type of GPS units should be purchased and by whom. 1 week into the heli season, the borough is looking for direction from the Assembly on how to implement the one-month-old ordinance. The Haynesboro Assembly meets Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. at Assembly Chambers in the Public Safety Building. Reporting for KHNS, this is Tara Bicknell. It's your news. If you have an idea for a story, email us. We're at news@khns.org.